Most of us are probably familiar with the story and his encounter with the burning bush in the desert. And I think when we come to this passage today, the question that jumps out at us is, who was Moses that God chose him? Why Moses? Couldn't it have been anyone else? Why him? And we know that he had what we would call a troubled and troubling upbringing. Didn't start out well for him. He was part of a refugee people who were despised in the land that there was their temporary home. So much so that they went from being guests to being slaves, and they went from being slaves to being people who were oppressed deeply and objects of hatred. And at one point it got really bad for his people. So much so that Pharaoh gave orders to the midwives that they were to kill every newborn Hebrew male. Well, that didn't work because the midwives found a way around that to defy the order. So he modified the order a bit. Still kill, but not the midwives at and during birth. They were to chuck the babies, the newborn baby boys, into the Nile River. Dispose of them like trash, like sewage poured into a river. And if you know anything about the Nile, that not only were the babies probably going to drown, but the ones that floated to shore somehow would get eaten by crocodiles. So it was a death sentence with certainty and cruelty. Moses is one of those newborns, and he, along with others, was cast into the Nile River. But what was different about Moses is that he was placed in a basket. His mother got a basket, kind of like a woven picnic basket, with a lid, and lined it with pitch and tar, and put him in it and floated him down the river. He was noticed by some royalty, a princess. She saw him and felt sorry for him. So she got her servant to pull him out of the water, and Moses was adopted by that princess. Now, I don't know for certain, but I think it's reasonable to assume what we know about psychology today and childhood trauma, that this boy grew into a man with some issues. Because you can't be placed in a basket and thrown into a river and adopted by the oppressors and not come out with some issues. Moses has some issues. Moses has some mama issues. He's confused about who his mom is. Who's the mother figure in his life? Is she the Egyptian princess that pulled him out of the water? The one that loved him when he was fresh, young baby, like a puppy, but then grows into an adult and starts chewing things and wrecking things, and you lose that puppy look and you lose your interest in that dog? Was he like that? Did she tire of him like that? We don't really know. She's not mentioned in the story again, except for this adoption. And it's likely that he was raised as a ward of the court in Pharaoh's court. He's confused about his mom. Is she the Hebrew slave that fed him for the princess? The one that took him home and nursed him and then later, once again, dropped him off at the Pharaoh's palace, left him there? He's got some mama issues. And I will also guess that he has some profound daddy issues as well. His biological dad's history is a little confused, to say the least. Get this. His dad married his dad's sister. Okay, so that's Moses' grandpa's sister. His dad married his own aunt. Kind of weird. And it's mentioned in the genealogy with this one detail about who Amram, his dad, married. We don't really know much about his dad. But we can also wonder if Moses really had any father figures in his life. Was the Pharaoh his father figure, being an adopted son? Seems not. He was adopted, and his adopted dad was quick to turn on him. There seems to be no patriarchal loyalty. Moses also had identity issues. Is he a Hebrew accepted by his people? Or is he an Egyptian accepted by those people? It seems like he's neither. And that's a pretty tough place to be in. A friend of mine who is half Cree and half Ukrainian was telling me once that all his life he hasn't known where he fits. When there are weddings on the reserve, relatives of his, no one will sit with him because he's half Cree and half white. Yet the white people see him as other, as Cree, and he doesn't belong there either. He's had a difficult journey, a journey of identity his whole life. Is Moses Egyptian or Hebrew? It's an identity question. And of course, he has some abandonment issues. You can't be put in a basket and chucked into a river and not be affected. Moses has some issues. Moses flees the land of Egypt after killing an Egyptian because he saw him beating a Hebrew slave. But what was he fleeing? Maybe he was running away from his own life. Maybe he was just trying to get away from it all, to create a new identity. In the desert, he found Jethro and married one of his daughters, and maybe finally found the family and the father figure in Jethro that he was looking for. We don't know. But I do know that with our biblical heroes, we are often reluctant to see them through a humanizing lens of hurts and pain and dysfunction that all of us see and maybe experience on a daily basis. But if it was anyone else that we heard the story about, if it were the same details but a Syrian refugee, wouldn't we all agree that there would be some trauma and some issues? We'd say, that guy, he's going to have some issues. Start saving for counseling. Moses has got some issues. He's got mom issues. He's got dad issues. He's got identity issues. And he's got abandonment issues. So this is the guy who is just minding his own business, he and his sheep in the desert, and he sees something that will change his life forever. It will burn his heart and sear into his eyes. He sees a bush that's on fire. It's on fire, but it's not burning. It's not being consumed. And it's really odd because that bush, being that dry, should have flared up and been consumed really quickly. So he's looking at this thing, of course, like you or I would have looked at it. And he says to himself, well, wow, that's interesting. Will you look at that? A bush that's burning, but not burning. I'm going to go take a look. So he goes over to this bush and takes a look, and things get stranger for Moses. He's looking at the bush, and then a voice comes out from the bush. Moses, Moses. Ooh, that's me. That bush knows my name. That's weird. And he says, here I am. But turns out, and we know this, it's God speaking to him from the bush. And he identifies himself as the God of Isaac, Abraham, and Jacob. And he says he remembers his people. He says he's going to do something about their oppression. Now, maybe this is all great news for Moses. We don't know. Maybe he's indifferent. It's been years. And he's left that life of Egypt behind him. He's married, he's got his sheep, and his life with Jethro in the desert. And then we get to the crux of the matter. You know who's going to lead the people out of Egypt? Moses? No, who? Tell me, please. You are. Ah. Now, if the bush on fire but not burning got his full attention, this definitely did. Did you hear me right? You are. You're going to lead them. Me? It couldn't be. This is what we read about how Moses responds in Exodus 3, verses 11 and 12. But Moses protested to God, who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt? God answered, I will be with you. And this is your sign that I am the one who has sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this very mountain. See, Moses, this man with issues, even though God calls him by name, Moses, Moses, even though God says it will happen, he doesn't believe it. He is a man full of doubt. He doesn't think he's worthy. He's full of fear. He doesn't even believe in his ability to talk straight, let alone straight talk with Pharaoh. And if we cheat forward to just a little bit in chapter 4, we see how bad it is. In verse 10, he pleads and begs God, "Oh Lord, I'm not very good with words. I never have been, and I'm not now, even though you've spoken to me. I get tongue-tied. My words get tangled. I can't even speak. I stutter." This guy who has mom issues, who has dad issues, who has abandonment issues, who has identity issues, has developed a nervous stutter. Can you imagine that? Strange. Wherever he goes, the way he speaks gives something away. It displays his inner turmoil, displays that he doesn't really think he's worthy, displays how much he doubts himself, displays that he's full of fear. Who am I? Who am I to do this? I'm just a nobody. No one special. Now, I sure relate to those questions and to those insecurities. Who am I to do this? Who am I to speak to these people? I'm not worthy. I get what he means. Have you ever listened to someone speaking publicly, preaching, and wanted to hurry them along and finish their sentences? Have you ever listened to someone try to preach a sermon, just bumble along, and you have no idea what they're talking about? I've listened to sermons that were like that. I've preached sermons that were like that. I remember when I was nearing the end of seminary, and it was getting close to the time when I was going to move out of the safety of seminary and to the church that I felt called to, and that was a scary time. Unlike Moses, I didn't have a burning bush experience when I heard my name called twice, calling me to ministry. Yet nonetheless, I did know I was called to this particular kind of ministry. In seminary, I had a preaching assignment. I had to preach at different churches and then have them kind of grade me, give feedback. And I had to record the sermon and have my professor go over the sermon with me. And looking back, do I ever feel sorry for those people that heard my first sermons? As I bumbled and stumbled my way through Scripture and tried crafting this thing that we call a sermon, I remember the sleepless nights before the sermons. I remember the terrifying first few minutes before you're called up. I remember that sinking feeling of not communicating what you want to communicate and watching people tune out as you speak. You can tell. They start checking their phones and watches and looking vacantly ahead, politely nodding, but nodding at the wrong places. We can tell. And then falling asleep and snoring. That's the most obvious one of all. And it's not a good feeling when you realize that you've lost everybody. So you check your manuscript and realize that you're only halfway through. And do I finish? Do I just stop now? Do I run away? It's not a good feeling. I was so desperate. I thought, hold on, how is this going to work out for me? I have to do this every week? Find me an errand. I need some help. I was so desperate that I joined a local club, a speaking club called Toastmasters that many of you probably heard about, and that helped a lot. But at some point, I just had to let go and say, I've been called to this. I'm going to have to step out despite my fears and trust God. And it's been excellent ever since. So I relate to Moses. I relate to his questions. Who am I? Who am I that people would follow me? Who am I that people would allow me to be part of their sacred moments? Who am I that I get to speak God's words to his people? Who am I? I relate to that question. I get it. And I know I'm not the only one. Each of you will come to a place more than once, often, where we have to make a decision. Do I give in to my fears, or do I push through regardless of what I fear? Moses was a wounded man who got a call from God and it scared him. Why me, God? Who am I? I'm so wounded, I'm so unworthy, I'm afraid. None of us, no matter how privileged or ideal our upbringing is, none of us go through life without getting wounded in some way. All of us, like Moses, are called to some particular ministry in this life on an ongoing basis. And all of us are called, like Moses, to step out in faith, to speak for God, to set captives free. All of us. It's easy to get overwhelmed with the task ahead. I get that. It's easy to think that we're not good enough. It's easy to think that we're not smart enough or tall enough or short enough or strong enough or compassionate enough. Easy to think we're too young or too old, not eloquent enough, not powerful enough. Let's just say that for all of us, those things are there. Yet despite all that, here is Moses at this bush, standing before God on holy ground, full of hurts from the past, full of issues that are unresolved, full of insecurity. Yet nonetheless, God is calling him. Yet God is telling him he is the one to lead the people. Yet God is telling him that he is up to the task. And the question is, how do you know that you're good enough? How do you know when you are ready? How do you know that? The answer to that question, at least here in Exodus, is a paradox. Because it's unclear if Moses is delivering the people or if God is doing it. We know that the power comes from God. We know that. But we don't know just how much God needs Moses. That's unclear. It's ambiguous. On the one hand, in Exodus chapter 3, verse 8, it says, God has come to rescue his people from Pharaoh and Egypt. He will do it. Yet, in verse 10, it says this, now go, for I am sending you to Pharaoh. You must lead my people to freedom. I am sending you. You will lead my people out of Egypt. You will lead them. It's unclear how much God needs Moses here. It's unclear how much of the rescuing is dependent on what Moses does. It's ambiguous. But that's the way it is for us too. It's unclear how much God needs us, how much is up to us. It's unclear how much we just let go and just go along for the ride, watching what God does like passengers in a tour bus. It's unclear. It's ambiguous. But for sure, no one read the Bible, the teachings of Jesus, the examples of the prophets and the heroes of the faith, and say, we don't need to try, we just go for a ride. For sure, no one would read the Bible and conclude that with our faith, no effort is required. No one would do that. You can't conclude that from reading the Bible. It just doesn't make sense. What kind of world would that be? What kind of faith would that be? It would be fatalism and futility. Evangelism? Doesn't matter. You've got no role to play anyway. It's all God. Preaching? Oh, doesn't matter. Just go up there and see what happens. Open your mouth, see what comes out. You might get away with that once, but after a month or two of doing that, it doesn't work that well. Loving our neighbors? Doesn't matter. That's all up to God. All we have to do is coast along and see what happens. No. What's required of us is faithfulness. What's required of us is looking and seeing and responding and loving when others don't. Mowing the lawn when someone's away. Bringing a pot of soup over to a neighbor when someone's sick. Sharing words of love and hope and encouragement when they're discouraged. No one would conclude by reading the Bible that we have nothing to do in this world as we partner with God. No one. We have a role to play. But just how much, that's left ambiguous. It's unclear. But certainly we need to bring something to the table. So is Moses asking a reasonable question? What do I bring to the table? Who am I to do this? Was Moses reasonable in doubting his own abilities to confront the might and power of Egypt and see his people released and set free? Wouldn't you doubt your own abilities? I sure would. Wouldn't you have some doubts, some concerns if God spoke to you and told you you were to go to China and negotiate the release of the prisoners? Would you go, me? Why me? Are you sure you got this right, God? Me? I sure would ask that question. So in this ambiguity of God's work, God doing it and our work, our participation in it, what is the line of us being concerned about it like Moses was? When does it become a problem that we think we're not worthy? I'm not sure exactly where that line is, but I do know the more we get fixated on our fears, the more they grow and consume. They grow and consume like fire in our lives. Our fears, our issues become a problem when we're driven to distraction by them, when we get haunted by these skeletons in our closet. And it becomes a problem when we can't seem to do what God is calling us to do because we're so fixated on what we are unable to do. Fear is like fire. But unlike the fire of the burning bush, it spreads. And it becomes a problem when fear spreads. Like the fire in our life and the fear become our source of motivation and gives heat to our unwillingness to participate and serve the way God is calling us to serve. We don't know how much He needs us. That's ambiguous. But we do know that we have a role to play. We don't know how things will turn out. If we refuse the call based on our fears, that's ambiguous. But we do know that nothing good will happen in and through us if we refuse to love God and love others to the best of our abilities, because we don't think we're good enough, because we doubt ourselves, because we're fearful. Nothing good will happen in and through us if we allow fear to burn in our hearts. Now, maybe it might seem that I'm overplaying the power of fear just a little bit. Maybe fear just seems like a cute little humble thing. Maybe fear seems like it kind of belongs to the meek and the gentle. But let me tell you this. Fear is like fire that burns in the heart. Tyrants and dictators, the powerful and the weak. Fear is the fire that prevents people from intervening when they should. And fear is the fire that drives people to terrible deeds. There's all sorts of fears. We all have them. Fear drives anger. Fear drives cowardice. Fear drives insecurity. Fear is a destructive fire that consumes. Fear is a fire that consumes and keeps burning. And when it's done with one thing, it will move on to another. Moses, who was probably messed up in all sorts of ways, asked God a question. Who am I? Who am I? That was the wrong question to ask. Moses had it wrong. The correct question is, who are you? So in the words of Paul in Romans 8:31, what then shall we say in response to these things? If God is for us, who can be against us? And Moses saw that burning bush. What he failed to see was the God of the burning bush. What he saw was like a mirror of his own fears and inabilities. And I think many of us make the same fundamental mistake in answering God's call in our lives. We ask, who am I? Instead of, who are you? Who am I, Lord, that you would call me to this type of ministry where I get to teach from the Bible and lead people deeper into the faith? Who am I? You could surely find someone better. See, but that's not the issue. Because it's probably a true statement. There probably is someone better. We all, like Moses, are messed up in some way. We all, like Moses, have disabilities. We all, like Moses, have fears. All of us, when we realize what God has called us, need to move away from the consuming fire of our fears, move from a place of fixation on our own abilities and talents to a place of trust in God's calling and his goodness and empowering. Not who am I, but who are you? And God's answer to Moses' question, who are you? God doesn't say anything about Moses' abilities. He doesn't say anything about being the strongest, fastest, or smartest. No. He answers Moses' fears by saying who he is. Moses asks, who am I? And God says in response, I will be with you. I will be with you because that is who I am. Want to know why you will succeed? Because I am. I am the beginning, I am the middle, I am the end. Moses asks, who am I? And God responds in a reversal, I am who. Fear is like fire. It can spread. It can motivate. It can burn and simmer quietly below the surface for years. And then when the conditions are right, it can flare up. Fear is like fire. It burns. It can be the source of fuel for saying no when we should say yes. It can be the source of fuel of saying yes when we should say no. But you know what we learn from this, from our humble hero of faith, Moses? Faith is the suppressant that puts the spreading fire of fear out. Faith is the antidote to fear. Moses was a hero of our faith. Why? Because despite his fears, he stepped up and answered the call. Doing God's will is like that. It's not the absence of any obstacles or fear. It's not the overcoming of those obstacles. It's the overcoming of those obstacles through faith. It's the stepping out despite fear because of God, faith in God, and who he is and his calling. It's despite our question that will probably haunt us the rest of our lives, who am I? Am I good enough? It's the grabbing hold of the answer to that question, who are you? He's the I am, Emmanuel, the one who is with us. And if God is for us, who can be against us? Moses is a hero of our faith. And despite those things that probably plagued him, Moses is known as a man of faith. In Hebrews 11, he's remembered that way. By faith, Moses left Egypt. By faith, he confronted Pharaoh. By faith, he walked with God's people. It's interesting, because earlier I said despite the things that plagued him, he was known as a man of faith, but it's almost because he had those fears and he overcame them that he is a man of faith. We will never be without fear, but faith suppresses the spread of fear. And faith allows us to answer the call of God in our lives. All of you, all of us, are called. You're called. You guys are called. All of you are called. Faith is the antidote to fear. Faith in God's purposes. Faith in God's calling. And I want to encourage all of you, us together as a church, let's pray for the gift of faith. Because faith doesn't remove doubt, it overcomes it. Faith doesn't remove fear, faith overcomes it.